Corky, without you, there's no show. Without the show, there's no celebration. Without a celebration, there's no blame. So you see how it's a domino effect. You know how dominoes do that. Without Blaine, I got news for you. There's no Missouri. Blaine is the heart of Missouri. What happens if Missouri goes down? You tell me.
Hello and welcome. Welcome and hello. This is Wait, You Haven't Seen. It's a show where we talk about movies, and specifically, we talk about a movie at least one of us has never seen before. I'm your host, Travis, aka TV's Travis. This is episode number 267, and our movie this week is 1996's Waiting for Guffman. And here to talk with me about it, because when she found out I hadn't seen it, I think a fuse blew in her brain. It's Amy Frost.
I was so upset.
You were like, wait, hold on, what? No?
So here's the thing, right? Because you needed a guest. And I'm, you know, in case of emergency, break glass, I emergency podcast guest.
Sure.
And so I compared the film. I was like, well, I mean, I think you'll like it. I mean, you liked Waiting for Guffman, right? And you were like, well, actually, I haven't seen that. And I was like, hang on. Hold on. I can't now.
You were mostly quiet for a solid like 60 to 90 seconds as you processed what I said.
I was thinking about all of the things that I have said over the course of our friendship that flew harmlessly past you.
Yeah, there were definitely a few of those. I get more of them now, though.
Yeah.
So Waiting for Guffman, 1996 film written and directed by Christopher Guest. Written is in air quotes, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Starring Eugene Levy, Fred Willard, Catherine O'Hara, Parker Posey, and of course, Christopher Guest. I want first your history with this movie.
Okay. I was trying to figure this out because I knew this question would come up. Mm. I can't pinpoint where I first saw it, but I'm going to assume it was art school since I was in art school in the early 2000s, and that's where most of my less than mainstream films came from.
Okay.
Was somebody in art school being like, hey, you should watch this? And I go, hey, yeah, I should. I was a theater kid growing up.
Okay.
And so this movie spoke to me on a deeply personal level.
I would imagine so.
Like, we'll get to it, but there is Catherine O'Hara delivers a line in a very specific cadence. And I guarantee you that I have delivered lines in that exact cadence on more than one occasion.
Yeah,
but
so
Christopher Guest is on that short list of directors that I will watch anything they make. It's a very short list for me, but I will watch literally anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, he's got a very distinct style to these movies that if you're into it, you are all the way into
mm-hmm.
it. Mm-hmm. So I knew of this one. So I worked in a video store in the early 2000s. And I was that guy where, you know, hey, I need you know that movie that starred that guy where they did that thing, and I could just tell you what it was and go find it on the shelf for you. Like, that was my job there. And this was shortly after Best in Show had come out. So mm-hmm. Best in Show was kind of in a regular rotation of movies we would play in the store.
Yeah.
And so that's how I saw that. And I knew Christopher Guest already from This is Spinal Tap. Love This mm-hmm. is Spinal Tap. Talked about it at length on the show, you know, several episodes ago, whenever that was. Probably, I feel like it was not that long ago. It's probably like a year and a half ago now.
Yeah, but time has no meaning. Yeah.
Right. So I knew Christopher Guest from that. And I love Fred Willard and all that.
Fred
but
Willard.
Waiting for Guffman was the movie I always saw the box for it. And mm-hmm. for a long time, like, I know of the play Waiting for Godot, but I don't know that I could tell you anything about the play Waiting for Godot other than the title. But I know it.
That's all I know of it. Yeah.
And for a good period of time, I conflated, for obvious reasons, this and Waiting for Godot, because I was just like, oh, that was the movie adaptation of Waiting for Godot. Sure. And just had out of sight, out of mind, because I never paid attention. All I saw was just the box cover with Christopher mm-hmm. Guest and those pants. And I just never paid much more attention to it than that. Because I didn't make the connection that that was a Christopher Guest movie. Like I didn't look at it close enough. It was just a movie on the shelf. And then I saw, I saw that one a few times, but A Mighty Wind came out and For Your Consideration came out. And that one I definitely remember quite a bit. And then I realized, oh, this is Guest, but then never got around to watching it and sort of forgot about it for a long time. And it would, I'm sure, has been referenced ad nauseum by more than just you in things that I didn't get. But it's one of those where every time I would think about it, I'm like, I need to watch that movie. Because again, love Christopher Guest, love Fred Willard, Catherine O'Hara, amazing.
Right?
Eugene Levy, love Eugene Levy. So I knew they were all in it, and I liked his other movies. I just never got around to watching this. And then we got to talking. I needed a guest. You mentioned, I don't even remember what the other movie was now. Oh, Strictly Ballroom.
Strictly Ballroom.
We were talking about that, and you're like, well, if you like Waiting for Guffman, right? I'm like, oh, I haven't seen that. And just the silence from you. I could picture your
upset.
Face.
I was like, upset.
One eye is twitching a little bit, and you're like, I don't know how to to process this information. So it was immediately people, that we pivoted to
the
that.
The average person, if the average person tells me they haven't seen Waiting for Guffman, like I don't have that same problem. But Trav.
Right. So I get ready. I sit down, start watching it. And first of all, those five in the cast are fantastic. Yeah. Okay.
They're so good.
Because I didn't even mention Parker Posey. Parker Posey is also in this.
Parker Posey.
And then I find out, and I thought this was fascinating. So Willard, Eugene Levy, Catherine, Guest, they've all done plenty of improv.
Yeah.
And they're good at it. And Parker Posey apparently had never done improv before this. And
she is the best part of the, like, there's a lot of great parts, but she is so good in this movie.
She is fantastic. And I think, okay, before we dive too much into the cast, because a lot of the smaller roles, a lot of the side characters are also actors I absolutely love. But
and they're Christopher Guest regulars.
Yes. But I want to start with Guest, and I mentioned in air quotes, written and directed by him. So
yeah.
I find this process fascinating because it is essentially a full improv movie. And I've done a little bit of improv, not a lot. I'm not very good at it at all, but I have done a little bit. So I understand kind of how that goes. And to go through this process to make a film, which is basically, and I did talk about this with This is Spinal Tap, because it's a lot of what they did there.
Yeah.
Is write an outline, write an idea of what you want your movie to be, but don't write any dialogue. And
no,
you just trust your actors to create the dialogue based on the information you want in the scene.
Right. And it's essentially they wind up filming it like a documentary, like a real documentary. Like I think this movie had something like 60 hours of footage.
Which just boggles my, like that's an editor's nightmare.
It is. I'm approaching an audio project that's going to be similar. I did say that it was going to be more like a Christopher Guest script than not. But I think it's one of the movies. I don't know if it's this one, but like one of the movies, the entire script is 25 pages.
This one was 16, I think he said.
Something like that.
In some interview.
My favorite thing about this, because this is a musical, like there are musical numbers in this. Mm-hmm. And on a technical level, it was written by Spinal Tap.
Yeah. That I love that. Yeah, it was Harry Shearer, Michael McKean, and Christopher Guest wrote the music for this. But what was really fascinating, kind of looking at some behind the scenes stuff and reading about it, was they had a 16-page outline, but very smartly realized, oh, we need to actually script all of the stuff that's in the musical play they're going to do. And that is, I mean, obviously that's smart to do, but it's also one of those things that thinking about it, I'm like, no, that wouldn't have occurred to me until later on to do that.
Yeah.
To have that be scripted, you know, very, very well scripted. And you've got fantastic. So it's scripted well.
It is.
And it, and this movie does the thing that I will forever be just amazed by, which is people that are good at something pretending to be bad at it.
Oh, it's really good.
Because that's so difficult.
Yeah. This is Catherine O'Hara in particular. Actually, Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy, both of them, both of their singing, like, all right, listen, if people haven't, if you liked Schitt's Creek and you love them as John and Moira Rose, mm-hmm. if you have not seen A Mighty Wind, you need, mm-hmm. because that is them as a duo in that, because they're not really a duo in this one. Like they act together, but they are not.
Sure.
They're not paired together here.
Nope.
But it is so good. Absolutely wonderful.
Like, good improv actors work off of each other so well. And yeah. So there's the layers to it, right? Because you've got all these improv actors working off of each other. They're all mm-hmm. pretending to be bad actors while doing some yeah. amazing acting gymnastics.
So good.
And they all have to be able to sing somewhat convincingly, at least. And then maybe, yeah. you know, all of that. And meanwhile, you've got Christopher Guest over there directing as well in costume with that ridiculous toupee.
It's so good.
Like as I was watching it, my note was, is that a bad haircut or is that a rug? I'm not sure. Because I wouldn't put it past him to have that. But it looked mm-hmm. so fake because it doesn't match the rest of his hair at all. But like,
it's so bad.
I could also see that being a thing. And then come to find out, no, it was a rug. He totally like saw that and was like, it's perfect. It's ridiculous. And it's just
so good.
And every single costume that Corky mm-hmm. wears is out of this world. Like amazing. Them. Those pants that looked like they were on backwards, but they're not.
Yeah.
I want a pair of those. For no reason whatsoever. I just want some because that was just the quirkiest, weirdest thing. I will say one thing that was a little tough for me coming at it this far into my life is mm-hmm. my grandmother's nickname from her husband was Corky. So whenever he would talk about her, he was always referring to Corky. And so that's all mm-hmm. I could think of every time that name would come up. It's just my grandma.
Incredible.
But no, just they're all so good. I mean, mm-hmm. Fred and Catherine playing Ron and Sheila Albertson.
Yeah, Albertson.
Are just like the idea behind that. So the whole thing takes place in this tiny little town of Blaine, Missouri. Yeah. And I love that Ron and Sheila are the travel agents that live in town and they've never left. Well, yeah. Okay, Fred left once. We'll get
for
there.
Medical reasons.
Yeah, it was a medical thing. We'll talk about that later. But they've never left Blaine, and yet they're travel agents. They're sending people on all these vacations, which yeah. is just hilarious to me. But you had Eugene Levy as the Dr. Alan Pearl, the dentist in town. And oh my goodness, just everything that man does.
And it's gold. Absolute gold.
Absolutely. So the lazy eye thing killed me. Absolutely yep. killed me. And then I read that Fred Willard didn't know about that. Like, he didn't get the joke when he was reading when he was looking at it. And then when it happened at the time, I think the exact quote was, let's see, it becomes necessary for Dr. Pearl to remove his glasses. Unfortunately, Dr. Pearl's glasses corrected his lazy eye problem. Actor Fred Willard was unaware of the gag during shooting. And after delivering the line, "What did your keen and perceptive eyes behold?" to Fabin, he stared at Levy's lazy eye, finally understood why his line was funny, and was, quote, "gone for about 10 minutes with laughter." And I can absolutely see that. And that's the strength and weakness of doing all improv stuff, too.
You don't know what's going to happen.
Apparently, Eugene
and
Levy.
You got to try and keep it together because it was probably great.
Well, I'm sure it was. And apparently, there was a scene, I think it ended up, it's in the movie. It's where Corky is trying to show off the dancing to them.
Yes.
And this is after we've seen him doing the dancing in his own apartment, which
it's so good.
I absolutely loved that. It was just mm-hmm. fantastic. But then the next scene, he's showing it to the actors, and I guess Levy could not control himself and had to like move to the back of the scene and get out of frame to keep everyone else from losing it because he was laughing so hard.
Because it's really funny.
It's, I mean, I talked about this in Spinal Tap, right? Like doing that and staying, you have to stay in character and you have to just riff off of each other. And there's a huge amount of acting trust involved in that.
Oh, absolutely.
And it doesn't work unless you can work with the other people. So it's like auditioning, you would think has to be incredibly difficult for something like a movie like this, which is why Guest always brings all of his friends along.
Same people. Yeah.
But apparently Parker Posey, it was a like 10-minute conversation with Christopher Guest, and he was like, she'll get it. It's fine. And cast her
she's
because of that.
Phenomenal. I love her.
Which is
and she's
unreal.
So good in this. Every scene that's just her, like where they're just like talking to her about her life. There's the scene when everything goes wrong and she's just out there smoking a cigarette, grilling a single chicken wing, fanning it with a paper plate.
Yes.
I say like the there's always a place for me at the Dairy Queen. I want it on a t-shirt actually. And she's just fanning this one sad chicken wing.
It's so good. It's so it's so absurd and so hilarious. And the idea, and again, it's a 16-page outline, but it's very important that what they want in the scene is explained to the actors.
You have to get from A to B. The road you take is up for discussion.
Sure. Which I can imagine, even as somebody who's not very good at improv, if I'm given enough kind of background information, because that's the thing, the other thing that I love about it is they go super in depth in all the characterization and character information, all stuff that we're never going to know. We don't need to know. It's the actors that need all that. So there's more time put into who are these characters than what they're going to say. And then you let the actors create the character out of that. I think it's brilliant. And it's got to be so much fun to do. Like that has to be such a fun set. Once you get into that, if you're in that mode, if you're Fred Willard and Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy and you're doing this, God, I can just imagine how much fun that's got to be to go to work every day. And then on top of that, you got a lot of guest regulars and amazing actors in all these small parts. Larry Miller as the mayor. Larry Miller will make me laugh so much in so many things. So it's unreal. He has the best dry deliveries of just about anyone going. I will never forget. It is seared into my brain in 10 Things I Hate About You. Where his one daughter says, but daddy, it's just a party. And he just looks at her and says, and hell is just a sauna. That's if I see a picture of Larry Miller, immediately I hear those words. And hell is just a sauna. Was it, I think it was that one. Cause I don't, yeah, it was 10 Things I Hate About You. I'm trying to remember if it's that or Clueless. It was one of those two. But Larry Miller, awesome. Michael Hitchcock as Steve Stark, the councilman.
He's great. He is, I think he's best in Best in Show, but he's phenomenal in this.
And the way, like the stuff that happens with his character, because over time you realize just how much he's into Corky.
And it's, so it's a funny thing, right? Because it's very much of the time, because we basically have two very closeted gay characters.
Yes.
And like it's wild, absolutely wild.
They're very closeted gay characters, but there's like hints to more with them, and they never fully explore it, which personally I think is a great way to do it, because like they keep mentioning Corky's wife. It's not vital at all, but it's important to who the characters are. I love the line from Dr. Pearl's wife, who, by the way, Linda Cash as Mrs. Pearl, I loved her too.
Unbelievable stuff.
But her whole thing with like, his wife, you know, I've never actually met his wife.
Yeah, like, she's not around much. I don't see it. I've never seen her. Her best part is when they interview her at intermission.
Oh yes.
And she's talking about how great it all was and how she had to call home and have the babysitter bring the baby so that she could feed him at intermission because she was just busting.
Like again, Michael Hitchcock and Michael Hitchcock for me, the most memorable thing I can think of, because he is great in Best in Show, but I think of Serenity. He had a small part in the movie Serenity as one of the government doctors. So when I see his face, that's what I think of. But I loved, like, you've got Corky, who absolutely 100% hitting on Johnny Savage.
Yeah.
Totally. And then you've got Hitchcock, Steve Stark, who's just all about Corky, to the point where I guess originally they had them like living together in New York in the end. And then they cut that.
Yeah.
I would have liked that.
He would never make it.
Well, he wouldn't make it in New York, but I kind of like the idea of him following Corky to New York, like going with him. But they were great. Deborah Thaker as Gwen Faben-Blunt. Again, not that many scenes, but the line, you know, I understand how the Kennedys feel. Like,
I understand how the Kennedys feel.
It was great.
Oh, no.
Personal favorite of mine, by the way, David Cross as the UFO expert.
Okay. All right. I have to tell you this.
Okay.
Because I've been watching this movie for literal decades. This is the first time I ever watched it with the subtitles on, because I just always have the subtitles on my TV.
Sure.
And so he's talking about the crop circle, right? And he says, and it brings me back to the number five. There are five letters in Blaine. And for the first time, I realized there are six letters in Blaine.
As I was taking notes later, I hadn't written out Blaine yet. And I started typing it out. And I was like, wait a second.
No,
does Blaine have an E or not?
Until this very day, I never noticed there were six letters.
And
because
you
don't get Nepali otherwise.
Right. I am a huge David Cross fan. Like, I just love his stuff. He is hilarious. I loved Mr. Show. And him as the UFO expert, perfect. The bow tie was excellent. We actually got both Mr. Show guys, because Bob Odenkirk has a brief cameo. His scene was deleted, but he's that. I saw him. I saw him in the auditions standing there in his cape, dressed up like a Count Dracula. It was amazing. Those auditions too. Those auditions were so good.
So authentic. It's upsetting.
I mean, the first one, James McQueen doing the song is great.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but you get the guy juggling ping pong balls.
Yep. Yep.
With his mouth, which was,
yep.
And then choking on one.
Yep.
And I absolutely loved the guy that does Raging Bull.
Unbelievable. And it's just, he's doing the monologue and then it pans over to their faces.
Their faces. That's what sells it. So he's an actor from Texas. They shot this in Texas. Yes. And he came to them with the idea of doing that. He brought that as like,
brilliant.
I'm from East Texas. Nobody in East Texas can do a De Niro or a Joe Pesci. So it's perfect. And he basically was like, I'm going to do both. And he like memorized both sides of it.
Yeah.
And then just does that. And it's why the movie has an R rating too, which is funny to me, because it's the only scene with any, with any foul language, but he just keeps dropping the F bombs. But it's the reaction shots of Christopher Guest. And then
and Bob Balaban.
Bob Balaban is another one that he's underrated funny.
Absolutely. He's so deadpan.
Right. He is deadpan. He is the straight man and the straight man funny man always. Yeah. And he does the deadpan deliveries, but he is so, so good at it.
He's so good at it.
And to be able to hold that together and be that kind of character. Lloyd Miller in this, I love that guy, right? Because he is... He's the music director of the high school, and he would put on all of the performances and all the plays, but now all of a sudden this guy
is so good. I've always done this, I've always put on the musical all by myself.
Mm-hmm.
But not in like, there's like no audible emotion. What I love about Bob Balaban is that he crosses over with one of my other directors I will watch anything, which is Wes Anderson.
Oh, yeah.
He's been in a whole mess of those movies.
So Wes Anderson movies and Christopher Guest movies are not that dissimilar. Like Anderson, it's weird, right? Because Wes Anderson is so meticulous
in everything, scripted. Yeah. But the results come out somehow.
It's two different avenues to get the same type of result, which is these quirky, these quirky movies with all sorts of crazy characters in them. And it just works. Mm-hmm. And it's cool to see both sides of that coin.
Yeah.
So I definitely love that. And you know, it's why you see crossover between those.
Yeah.
With people. So yeah, Bob Balaban, amazing. Paul Dooley is the UFO abductee. One scene.
he was in apparently two, but I know him from one episode of The Golden Girls in which he is also brilliant. That's like what I think of every time I see him, is this one episode of The Golden Girls.
Well, we just saw him recently on our other podcast, Those Were the Days, in The Wonder Years.
Yes,
he popped up as the coach. So that was fun. But yeah, his UFO abductee was great. I also loved Louis Arquette as Clifford. The scene where Corky goes to recruit Louis and get Clifford on the show. Just killed me when he walks in because the TV's on static. But then he's like, I wanted to be an actor, but then I went to taxidermy school.
Well, I wanted to be a correspondence course.
Correspondence course.
Yeah. When I got out of the Coast Guard, Corky trying to like have enthusiasm for this terrible taxidermy. It's like, well, I made a gun rack. I didn't know they could. You could put their little hands up like that.
Yeah. I didn't know deers could do that. The voice that Christopher Guest does for Corky is...
It's too much.
I'll be honest. I looked through because I'm like, there's no way he's that character in Family Guy.
No.
But if that voice in Family Guy was not influenced by Corky St. Clair...
Oh, yeah.
Don't know what was because good Lord, it's very similar. But yeah, just the whole thing with Clifford and then him as the narrator was brilliant.
It's so good.
That whole
opening.
You did
a great job.
It's a funny movie, right? Because it's like there's three acts to it, but all of act three is the performance. And that's like the last half hour, I would say.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit more. And we get that moment of everything's falling apart because Corky, so he's putting the play on, he casts everybody, and then he gets, did he send letters to the New York, to people in Broadway, or did somebody just unsolicit kind of send something back?
No, he did. He said 10 letters.
Okay. That's right. Okay. And then it's Mort Guffman is going to come and check out the play from one of those companies. And so... I just love like it's perfect small town thing where it's like, oh, well, then we're going to Broadway. Like we're going to wow them and we're going to end up on Broadway with this.
But not if we don't get $100,000 to put on this show.
That scene.
It's so
I
good.
I love that because he comes.
My favorite lines in it.
Oh, which one?
No, we're going to get to it. Keep going.
Okay. So yeah, so he comes in front of the council, the city council, and says, "I need $100,000 to put on the play," and they're like, "Dude, we have $15,000 in the budget for literally everything for a year,
including the pool." And my favorite line is, "There's no swimming in my play."
So they obviously they turn him down, and Corky's just deflated, and he quits. And that's our big drama moment, right? Is him quitting. And I'd love when
it's one of two big drama moments.
Well, because we had before that was when Lloyd comes up to Corky during a rehearsal. That scene right there alone. Well,
that
scene
is very funny.
Again.
The whole thing about whispering.
Yes.
Like,
and
he's trying not to hurt their feelings. He's trying not to tell them that they're all terrible. And so he's trying, he's just talking normal. Oh, you want me to be louder? Well, now you're shouting.
And again, the idea that that's all being improv'd.
I feel like that is the most improv-y feeling. Like that mm-hmm. part, I go, yes, I understand how that worked.
Yeah. And they don't miss going no. off on that. And some of it's editing. I get that. Finding the right takes. But yeah. But still, like, it's so well done. So we get that drama. And then Corky quits. And so now Lloyd is like all about it. He is super excited, right? Because he gets to run everything. Back. He's got his show back. Although, you know, the level of he's at like a 2 on the emotional scale. Like that's as excited as that dude gets.
I mean, he's a small town music director. Like, right. He's not exactly, you know.
He's fine. And then all of the actors immediately leave to go get Corky because they love him. And he's just sitting in that bathtub.
The bathtub.
The shot
it's
in the
so
bathtub.
Dramatic.
And that man had so many polka dots on things because early costume of his was like two different sized polka dots.
Yep.
On his shirt and jacket, which was fantastic. Yeah. And then I'm pretty sure there were polka dots on the shower cap.
We missed a line from when he's leaving the council meeting. There is a gay joke in there, but the line, you're all bastard people. I refer to bastard people regularly. Like I guarantee that is one of the things that I have said that would have just sailed past you.
Mm-hmm.
You would have been like, that's a weird turn of phrase, but okay.
I just figure it's a New England thing.
Bastard people.
Oh man. It's just that everything is great. And then you get to when you get to act 3 and the show starts, the actual musical starts going, it just gets better. It goes so much harder.
And
it does. It's really well done, and the songs are great. I think my favorite is probably Stool Boom. Such a good song.
He wanted to put in that little town in Texas where they filmed most of this, he wanted to put up a sign that said stool capital of the world or whatever it is, and they would not let
him. And that's another one, right?
We haven't approached that level of
the jokes, right? The subtle jokes like that it gets funny. And it's right out in the open and
funny.
They
don't get it because no one there, no one in that world sees anything funny about it.
Nope, not at all. I immediately, like in the opening of the movie when they say the stool capital of the world, I just have to chuckle. I just have to chuckle to myself, like that's too funny.
You're like, surely not.
They didn't actually go with that. No, no, they did. They did.
Oh, no, they did.
Yeah, it's just, Stool Boom was a great song. What was the other one?
Okay, so right before the show actually goes on, what's his name? Quits.
Oh, Johnny Savage, right, yes.
Johnny Savage quits. And so Corky's in it. So that is the Parker Posey line. It's the day of the show, y'all. And that is another one. I have done that in reference to podcast recordings. I know that for 100% of a fact.
Oh, yeah, no, I can...
The show, y'all.
And
also in the gymnasium where they're holding rehearsals, and the play, I suppose, there is an OK soda machine And what I love about this is that it grounds me in the reality that OK Soda existed because no one else remembers it. And I loved it. And I wish they would bring it back. And it's in there. It's right there. The OK Soda machine next to the Powerade machine.
It's not one I'm familiar with. I know. I will say that. I don't know OK Soda whatsoever, but I did see the machine in the background. So
it was real. I'm telling you all, it was real.
It did exist. Mm-hmm. So there you go. No, it's just, oh, it was fantastic. I loved, oh, Brian Doyle Murray, by the way, as, Johnny's dad, Johnny Savage's dad, one scene, but he's amazing. Yeah. He's so good in that one scene.
He has got all of it figured out so fast.
Yep, he knows exactly who Corky is and what Corky's all about talking to his son, but he doesn't lead on about it at all, which cracked me up.
We didn't talk about Don Lake.
Giving him the savage side. Oh, okay. Go on about Don Lake, please.
It's Don Lake. All right, so Don Lake is the town historian. And I don't know if you've ever been to a local historical society, but this is so dead on of like... he is the poster child for hyperfixation. And he's so brilliant and like he knows everything, and his office is so charmingly messy and delightful. It's like you think the first UFO sighting was in Roswell. Well, no, it was in Blaine, and people were taken on board the ship for a potluck dinner.
And apparently he was originally like the principal of the school or something.
Sure.
And they changed the character to be the city historian. But all the stuff they had filmed with him during the musical is him as the other character. They basically made him the same character.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't at all. But
but I think fitting the principal in is harder.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, for sure.
It doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter.
No, but Don Lake is another one of those. Like, there's so many of these people in this. Larry Miller, Don Lake, David Cross, Bob Balaban, Paul Dooley. They're actors that just show up and stuff. And you're just like, I like that guy. I like that person. I mean, same with Fred Willard, Catherine O'Hara.
But there. It's a difference if you cross this line where I know your name, that's like, you know everyone's name. If I know their name, then that's fair. Like a big deal.
By the way, I only know all of their names because I obsessively go over IMDb. I mentioned this last episode. Most of my knowledge.
I'm the one that rolls in with, you know, the guy that was in that thing with that girl, but then he did that other thing with that other guy. That's me 100% of the time. And I have to like try and remember a title so that I can IMDb and scroll back and figure out, like, follow the chain to figure out who I was talking about. And by then it's not relevant anymore.
That's true. Yeah, by the time you get there, the information is no longer needed.
Yeah, it's irrelevant.
This did, by the way, make me, just as a side tangent, want to watch Mascots. Did you watch that?
No.
Because that is apparently Christopher Guest as well.
Is it?
That's from 2016. And it's got a lot of your same people. It's got Zach Woods, Michael Hitchcock is back in it. Chris O'Dowd.
Love so, Chris O'Dowd.
John Michael Higgins, who I love. He's great. It's about mascots. A look into the world of competitive mascots. It's not rated as high as other Christopher Guest stuff. I will say that.
Sure.
But I still want to watch it. It still looks interesting to me.
What year did you say that was?
2016. I think it was a Netflix production.
Oh, maybe it was. Oh, and he plays Corky. He plays Corky.
Yeah.
How have I not watched this?
I don't know, but you're going to have to.
I'm not saving it for the show. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Perfectly fine. There. Also, I love that, you know, they're waiting for this guy, Mort Guffman, right? They're so excited about Guffman's going to come and watch the show and fall in love with it. And they're all going.
And they've reserved a front row chair.
Yep. And like, I love the fact that, you know, it's the small town theater production in a high school gymnasium, and they think they're convinced that not only is the show going to end up on Broadway, but they're all going to be in the Broadway version of the show.
Obviously.
And the show starts and he's not there. And so everybody gets all bummed out, and Corky's like, no, look, I know these New York types. They never show up on time. Don't worry about it. Don't even worry about it. And of course, partway through, guy walks in and he's shown to the reserve seat.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're excited.
That's the best. Backstage is so good. Should Backstage we start is- over?
Yes. Should we start? We should do the whatever song again.
Covered Wagons again.
Yes, Covered Wagons. That's the one. Oh, I had a note on that. I'm like, I just loved, because Covered Wagons was fantastic. And that whole opening, I mean, we get the payoff of the keen and so perceptive eye joke.
Yeah. And she says, California sure will be a sight for these sore eyes. And I was like, I should have called out Catherine O'Hara. There is no need to be that way. Listen, I've come a long way since then. Have you listened to Aquilo? I'm great now.
The tagline for this movie, by the way, the tagline might be my favorite tagline of any movie ever, mm-hmm. Which is, there's a good reason some talent remains undiscovered. That's incredible. When the musical gets going and they're so excited, I love that backstage. We should do Covered Wagons again. And so they're like going for it. And you get through the whole show. Oh, yeah. We get the intermission.
So hard.
And
the
everything
song is great. And it's so funny because all of these things that was it Johnny? Is that what his name was?
Johnny Savage, yeah.
Yeah. That, like, so it's now, instead of young, hot Johnny, it's Corky St. Clair. So there's a really cute, like, World War II sweet song with him and Parker Posey, and you're like, I believe none of this.
Okay, so small detail they did in this that I found absolutely amazing. They didn't need to do this, and you don't, it's not something you would consciously notice, but it's so perfect, is there's a scene where Corky's trying to get the costumes on and it's like he's having trouble with it.
Yeah.
which is great. I love that. But then later on, you realize none of the costumes fit him right.
None.
Everyone else looks great and his are like just misshapen or wrong all the way around. And it's so good.
He's a lot. The costume lady's so good. He's a lot different body type than it's very political.
But then when it's Catherine O'Hara, she's like, I told you to lay off them hot fudge sundaes. I couldn't let the seams out.
That was a different lady.
Oh, that was a different lady? Okay.
That was different. I'm pretty sure.
She was taken. She took no guff from anybody. She was very, very straight shooter. But I just love that. Like, we get the one scene with it, but then I noticed every other costume was just a little off. And it was great. Like, it's those little things that add so much to it.
That's that Wes Anderson tie. Mm-hmm. It's like these tiny little details. Ugh.
Even something as simple as you've got the orchestra there to do all the music, which, by the way, Lloyd crushing it as the conductor.
He's so perfect. He is every musical director I've ever had. my favorite is because it is still a small town, so the timpani player also plays the trumpet at the same time.
Yes. Which killed
one hand
me.
Each, just rolling with it. We're doing what we can, gang.
But the other great thing, and again, totally don't need to do this in a movie, but it's a nice touch. They are, even if they're not actually playing the music we're hearing, they're playing the music, and you can see that they are playing at least what we think we're hearing.
Yeah.
Like the movements, all the fake playing that you're doing on camera to then be dubbed in matches the music that's going on.
I mean, that was a big thing in Spinal Tap.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. You know, I guess that does make sense.
They reshot stuff for that. So that's like you got to believe it.
But in Spinal Tap, you have to believe it because the movie is about that band. And in this, you could have gotten away with them just being good enough, but they go that extra bit. And it's something that I notice. And I just have to call that out because it's such a great, attention to detail thing that pulls me into the movie even more.
It could have been that small town's orchestra. It could have just been them.
Given the way they do their auditions and everything, yeah, I'd believe that. It was so good. And again, Lloyd was just fantastic.
Yeah, especially during Stool Boom. He's doing the quiet and the big shoulders, and then it gets big, and it's just so good. Oh.
Just fantastic all the way through. Another running gag that killed me, and the more I would notice it, the more I couldn't see anything but that, is Sheila's hair. Catherine O'Hara's hair throughout the whole movie is just chef's kiss, because she's got that little bit right in the front that, like, it's sticking straight up like Cameron Diaz's hair in There's Something About Mary.
Yeah, that ties into the other movie that we almost did, which someday we'll come around to. Okay. My favorite thing, though, this was another thing that I had only noticed this time. In one of the backstage scenes, Fred Willard is getting her to do his hair. And like, no, dude, you know where I like the curl. Do the curl I like. All right. And then fluff it up over here. And then you can work on yourself. In the next scene, he's wearing a hat.
I didn't notice that.
I had never noticed it before. He's wearing a hat.
It's just so fantastic. I captured audio from this. I have so much audio to play. We have to talk about this.
You have to play some of them at least, for sure.
I have to. So I'm going to start.
I hate your ass face. Tell me that's in there.
We'll find out. We're actually going to start with the historian.
Yes.
Because he had a couple great ones. What was his name again? How can I think of it? Don Lake. Wow. Phil Burgess, Blaine Historian, played by Don Lake. This is a short one, but I love replacements for swearing from people. Yes. I'm always looking for those. Though that and fake laughs are the things that I will always hear, and I love it. When I was in junior high school, we had a gym teacher, Mr. Gerard, or G, as we would call him. And somebody in class one day said something, and his response was, "Oh, bullfish." And he said it so quickly, all of us had to do a double take. So when Don Lake comes up with
bull roar.
Yeah. Bull roar.
That's top level. That may end up being used by me a lot, as well as another Don Lake. I love this.
Blaine became the stool capital of the world.
At that point, I was like, oh, yes, let's just sit back and enjoy. This is going to be great. We had Paul.
Yeah, they really get you early. They let you know real early where you're at.
Paul Dooley as the UFO abductee. So we've got him saying
different ones of them come in, 4, 5, 6 of them at different times, and all of them probe me. Not all at once, you know, individually.
Individually.
You know, for clarification.
Right. Followed up by one of the funnier things in the entirety of this movie.
I find I have no feelings in my buttocks.
Every Sunday, I have no feelings in my buttocks. It was great. I only captured, I think this might be the only Parker Posey line I captured. She has a lot of good ones, but it's funny because it's...
I always have a place at the Dairy Queen.
I want that. It on a shirt. I always have a place at the Dairy Queen.
It would make a fantastic shirt.
Derbies for like a long time. I think like 20 years. It's been so much longer than 20 years, baby girl. what are you doing?
How old is she supposed to be in the movie?
Young.
Because she's like... I think 27
the
or 28.
The bit about her dad getting out of jail too is so good. Because like, he's supposed to get 10 years, but I guess because he didn't kill nobody, he just destroyed some property. Let him out after 5.
Because she's back working, but it's a different Dairy Queen now, right?
I think it's just inside the Dairy Queen. I think we're just inside.
Because I may have missed where, if it was still in Blaine or not.
Oh, I'm pretty sure it is.
Okay.
Because she was going to go to New York, but then right. her dad got out of jail.
That's right. Okay. This one is just in the, is all I have that I can see. So I don't remember what this is now.
Where Corky, on the other hand, look at him. Did you see? God, I wish I was in this show.
That's right. That's old Steve Stark. I love that. Steve. That was the moment where I was like, I love this character. Because it's you knew now what we had, and he kills it there at that moment. It's so well done. Dr. Alan Pearl, Eugene Levy. I only got a few of his, but there's pretty good ones. I loved
From my grandfather, Chaim Perlgut.
Chaim Perlgut. It's a good name.
Chaim Perlgut. Bubby got it. Bubby made a kishka.
Yeah.
It's from that review.
From that review, which the review was?
Dibbick schmibbick, I said more ham.
That alone, that is going to, I'm using that for something. I don't know what yet, but dibbick schmibbick, I said more ham is going to happen. You've also got him mentioning his lazy eye.
I have a very lazy eye, which these prescription glasses help correct.
It's good stuff.
It really, really is. And I loved, so then you've got all that. And then when he gets into the show and he's playing this character of Blaine, whatever, Blaine Fabian. And I love the whole idea of this town. Like, this town got started because they were heading west and Blaine Fabian got confused and thought he smelled salt air and convinced everybody they were at the Pacific Ocean, and they just sort of stayed. Like, that alone is a great story.
The best part is the line about, like, for a while he convinced them it was just low tide.
Yes. Because it makes me think of... the comedian Gallagher had a bit, and he was talking about heading west, and he's like, people didn't set out for Denver. You know, they just got to the Rocky Mountains and a wagon wheel broke, and they looked up and saw the mountains and were like, screw it, we'll just stay here. Like,
yeah,
you know, and it gave, I got very much of that energy out of the history of Blaine, killing me. But he's playing Blaine Fabian, and then he speaks his line, and it just, the way he said this.
It was the scent of salt water.
That's that. That is
this terrible fake beard.
Yes, that terrible, terrible fake beard, and just Eugene Levy killing it, making me laugh the whole time. Ron and Sheila. Yes. So the scene with Ron and Sheila doing the double date with Dr. Alan and his wife at the Chinese restaurant. So that scene didn't need to be in the movie at all.
No.
But if it's not in the movie is lesser for it, because Lord,
it's the
is
most
it funny.
Awkward thing on the planet. It is. Oh my God.
It is right at the edge of like awkwardness that I can continue to watch. Like I was 10 seconds away from being like, I was close to being like, ooh man, I got to cut loose on this one. Like, it's bad. Because Sheila is just wasted the whole time, and acting drunk is not easy to do convincingly.
Yeah,
but she did it. She really, really did it. And I love, she keeps bringing up, because we had the one mention of his medical excursion outside of Blaine. But that's it. And then she's going on and on about it. And I just love this.
Nothing. I had a minor corrective surgery. Can we have some coffee at this table, please?
It's not minor anymore.
He's just trying so hard to change the subject. And then they finally get it out of him. They finally get out of him what the minor procedure was.
You know, most guys would dream of, you know, I had to have a penis reduction surgery.
I'm sorry?
Penis reduction.
He's telling this to, you know, the only medical guy he knows, which is the dentist. Apparently, his whole thing of getting up to undo his pants That was like the one thing he told Christopher Guest about ahead of time.
Yeah.
And that was it. And, so and Guest was, it's so, it's so good. Cause again, the reaction, like that's a genuine reaction from you. Oh, oh no, I don't need to see that at all. Just right in the middle of the restaurant.
Unbelievable.
When we meet them is hilarious because you've got him on the phone with somebody and you're getting the wonderful one side of the conversation of
good old fashioned American diarrhea.
Montezuma's revenge is just good old fashioned American diarrhea.
Adult diapers should never even enter the picture.
Yeah.
That's another sound clip I'm keeping and I'm going to use for, I don't know what, but I just,
there it is. You have it now.
Adult diapers should never enter the picture.
I don't know. I really don't. Even subtle things like this is an incredibly funny line delivered perfectly by Fred Willard.
You got to stop crying. She hasn't cried this much since the day we got married, honestly.
It's just, and she's just over there quietly sobbing.
When they meet the man that they think is Mort Guffman, and she's like, oh, Sheila Albertson, it's such a pleasure. He's like, oh, you were so wonderful. And he goes, Mrs. Ron Albertson. I'm Ron Albertson. I was like,
yep.
You son of a bitch.
And you said this one already, but I couldn't help but capture.
A little fluff here, and you can work on yourself.
And now I'm going to have to watch it again just to see him with a hat on in the next scene.
Wearing a hat.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Wearing a hat. Of course, I got a lot of Corky because, man, he had – Christopher Guest was on fire.
On fire.
This is great because this works in two ways. I'm going to play it first, and then I'll give why I think it works two different ways.
What it means is we may be going to Broadway.
That wasn't the one I thought it was, but I like that. I just love that.
That's a good one.
That one's great. It was this one.
10 or so years, you know, off Broadway, and then enough is enough, okay? I get the joke.
What I love about that is it can very easily be interpreted as like kind of a stutter and just sort of trying to find his thought. And then I thought about it and I was like, no. This is about an off Broadway.
Off Broadway, New Jersey. It was
fantastic. You said this one already. It's too good not to capture.
Then I just hate you and I hate your ass face.
Remember when we could slam phones down? I miss slamming phones down.
I do too.
It's not the same anymore. I can't angrily touch a screen. It's not the same.
No. When he's working with Dr. Allen, and he's telling him you gotta hook the fingers in there. You gotta really get, don't just grab at your shirt, or really hook your fingers in there and get it. And he starts to do his lines the second time, and it's
almost as if like you're squeezing boobies out, and it's
squeezing your boobies out,
going out to that audience. It's the best because as he does it, right, like as he's hooking his fingers into his armpits and he's doing this thing, he does look down, which we already caught him looking at the belly dancer during auditions.
Yeah, that was another one. That was another one that cracked me up because she's over there just rolling her head back and forth, you know, stretching her neck out. And he realizes he can sneak a peek and he's not subtle about it.
Dr. Allen. It's not cool.
Talking to old Clifford there about,
boy, I didn't know deers could do that. You know,
that is the better, like, I don't know how many different takes they had of that, but that is such a good delivery of that line, because you could easily make it like, well, I didn't know deers could do that, but it's there's that hesitation in there, and like as he's doing the little
hands,
I just absolutely loved it when he asks for money.
What I need is $100,000.
I think that's going to become my new alert on Twitch when somebody subscribes.
Yes, do it.
Is now going to be that.
I need is $100,000
because that's really, really good.
Yeah, it's really good.
I love too, Corky, you know, because it's a small town, right? So everybody's got kind of a knowledge of everybody else. And when he's mm-hmm. talking about Ron and Sheila, and they're the go-tos, right? They're the veterans. Mm-hmm. They are the...
I call them the Lunts of Blaine.
The Lunts of Blaine.
So good.
And I don't remember which moment this was where he was talking about running into somebody's wife while shopping. Because he does all the shopping for his wife.
Yeah.
And he runs into Dr. Allen's. Oh, it was when he was talking about discovering Alan. That's what it was.
Yeah.
After Alan's, which again, that Dr. Allen's audition is pretty objectively terrible.
Unbelievable. Oh, it's so bad.
And the reactions of Corky and Lloyd.
Really good.
Yeah. They both genuinely loved it. It was so good.
That's so bad.
But I just love this line.
But we found him. That's the important thing. And I got Bonnie a wonderful pantsuit.
That was the moment where I had to look and be like, is he the voice of that guy in Family Guy? Because, boy, if he's not. And he's not.
No.
But, I also like...
You know, how dare you talk to me like that, you? And smack him.
And smack him.
Yeah, talking about duels.
Yep.
Smack him.
There was a couple bits at the end. So and the wrap up afterwards. So plot wise, they finish the play. Mort Guffman, or who they think is Mort Guffman, he goes up, he talks to him. The guy never gives away who he is. And Corky brings him backstage. He meets everybody. And then the guy's like, oh no, I'm whomever. And as they're backstage, the stagehand's like handing him a note. I'm sorry, I didn't get this to you earlier. And so the guy reveals he's not Mort Guffman, but he's just somebody who happened to be in town
he's the judge that lives next door to the Adams family.
Well, yes. another actor that just puts a smile on my face.
Yeah.
But he leaves, and that's when Corky reads, you know, oh, all the planes are canceled. So Guffman never showed up. But we get the tie-ups of everybody afterwards, right? Dr. Allen's in Miami doing his songs for retirees.
She made a big event.
That's perfect. Perfect for him. But I love Corky's in New York.
They're so disinterested.
Oh yeah, absolutely. People. But Corky's in New York and he's got his store, and I just loved, like, he was so excited for
Remains of the Day lunchbox, and the kids, they're just having such a good time with these, you know.
The My Dinner with Andre action figures.
Yes.
And he's trying to get the ones for Das Boot.
I lost it at the My Dinner with Andre action figures. And then recreating scenes from the movie with action figures.
How did
figures.
You get a reservation? I just called. Oh, you can always get a table. That's not from the movie.
Well, and then apparently Wallace Shawn like wanted to be in the movie, and they didn't have anything for him. So he ended up, according to trivia, grain of salt this, but according to the trivia, Guest gave him the My Dinner with Andre action figures.
Outstanding.
Which is phenomenal.
Yeah. I feel like Wallace Shawn would have been too much.
He probably would have. But man, would it have been fun to see him too, like riffing off
absolutely.
Of them.
Absolutely.
He would have been, I love Don Lake, but if you couldn't get Don Lake, he would have been a great town historian.
Yeah. Yeah.
He'd have been really good for that role.
Yeah.
And then finally, you got Corky. And this is also at the end when he's talking about he's going to be in My Fair Lady.
Oh, no.
And he says,
who teaches Liza how to speak correctly?
Speak correctly.
Correctly.
There's more to that scene that just cracks me up.
His Cockney is so bad.
What's great about that is, again, somebody being bad at something that they're good at, because we've seen Christopher Guest and Michael McKean and Harry Shearer doing great accents and doing it really well. I mean, his Count Rugen.
I was going to say
Princess Bride. Like, Princess Bride. I thought it took me a long time into my adulthood before I knew Christopher Guest was from the
U.S. I was going to say that before I figured out that Christopher Guest was Count Rookin. Mm. I was like, wait a minute. Surely not.
Also married to Jamie Lee Curtis. And they're still together.
Huh. Wow.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
That is cool.
And one more time.
Then I just hate you, and I hate your ass face.
Oh, it's so good. This movie cracked me up. It is criminal that I hadn't seen it until now. But you made me watch
it. Now.
Yeah,
I did. Oh,
this is improv done right. This is what happens when you get the right mix of people and doing as much as they did and having 60 hours of footage to then comb through and figure out and use is a daunting task. But holy hell, does it work? Like, it's just, even as somebody who wasn't in a lot of theater growing up, I still was around it enough. That was like the one group that I didn't hang out with a lot in school was the theater kids. I was around, I was ancillary to it, but I didn't spend a lot of time there, but I understood a lot of that. So I could, while I didn't directly identify with anybody, I certainly knew all those different people. And it's just great. And being in a small town as well, like the small town theater stuff, it's just, if you are into comedy at all, but into especially theater, you need to watch this movie. Don't be like me and keep waiting. Watch the damn movie. It's that good. And then just go on a Christopher Guest binge. Watch the rest. Watch Best in Show.
Watch them all.
Honestly, for your consideration, hilarious. Because again, just such a outlandish idea. Best in Show might be my favorite, although this is right there. This is good.
A Mighty Wind is my favorite. See, this, I had to have seen this movie in college because we were very into A Mighty Wind in college. So
do you think you saw A Mighty Wind first and then someone's like, now you got to watch Waiting for Guffman?
We definitely saw Waiting for Guffman first.
Okay.
And Best in Show. I saw them more or less in order other than Spinal Tap, which only tangentially counts.
Yeah, because it's technically a Rob Reiner film. But it's the same exact style. Like, it's just, I love this type of movie too. Because again, and I mentioned this earlier, but like the awkwardness is entertaining and they know just how much of it to give you before going too far.
Yeah.
Because there are movies that will have that and it's tough. It's hard to watch. And this is able to get the right amount of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then sprinkle in all sorts of, it's a great stuff. Like the David Cross UFO stuff. It's one scene. It's a throw again, doesn't have to be in the movie, but it adds so much flavor to Blaine as a city. And then it makes sense later on why it's
circle. The weather is always 64 degrees with a 40% chance of rain. Always. Which has big, it works 50% of the time, every time energy.
Yep. Oh yeah. Oh, it's just fantastic. It's just fantastic. Thank you for making me watch this because this was a lot of fun. I mean, it's always a pleasure having you on, but you have brought consistently good stuff. When you find out I haven't seen something that you love, Condor Man was another one. Like Condor Man was really, really good. And this it had no right to be. This is much better
it
than
had
that.
No right to be good.
Yeah. This is better than Condor Man. This is up there with me for like, in terms of, this isn't as surprising to me as say Amelie, when you brought that one to me, because I figured I would appreciate Amelie, but I wasn't sure how much I would like it.
Sure.
And then I absolutely loved it. This one I was pretty sure I would like just based on, I've seen other Christopher Guest.
Yeah.
And 100% knocked it out of the park. Great. I can't thank you enough for that, to finally fill that gap in my movie knowledge. And now I'm going to get your references, by the way, you know, because there's always something for me at the Dairy Queen.
Dairy Queen. There's always a place for me. Dairy Queen.
Yeah. So thank you. And also, a big thank you to being one of my emergency guests.
I'm happy to do it.
get changed. It's nice to have those people I can count on. So thank you for that. This show, I mean, go ahead.
I was going to say, as long as I can bully you into watching things I like, then I'm happy to do it anytime you want.
All right. And because of that, I'm able to do this show every week for the past 267 weeks minus one, which is kind of a weird thing to think about how long I've been doing this show now, but I have. And because of wonderful guests like you, I'm able to do it every week and then stream it live, twitch.tv/TVsTravis or youtube.com/@TVsTravis. You can watch it live as it happens. Comes out as a podcast every Wednesday, anywhere you get your shows, including a video version on YouTube. The most recent episode prior to this one was live in Las Vegas. And if you were there for that live, I appreciate you and thank you. And it was a wonderful experience doing that. And I get to do it again in a few months at Dragon Con. So be watching for that. That'll be a ton of fun. But Amy, this was super, super fun. Thank you so much.
Hey, I'm so glad.
So what have you got coming up? You've got something that's going to happen here soon.
I sure do. This Thursday, May 9th, episode 1 of season 7 of my fiction podcast, Aqualo, comes out that I do with JF Dubow. There's a lot to catch up on if you have not listened yet, and you maybe should. But season 7 starts this week, and that's very exciting. So that is available at aquilo.com or wherever you get your podcast, A-C-H-E-W-I-L-L-O-W.
And it is a fantastic show. And I don't just say that because I adore both you and JF. The show itself is amazing.
This season is shaping up to be pretty phenomenal.
I can't wait. Thursday, I'm going to be there. Ready to listen. So that is aquilo.com. You can also, I think there's merchandise and stuff too, right? All that at aquilo.com. Might
not, if there is any, then yeah, there might be a little right now.
Whatever you need. Yeah.
Whatever you need is there. All the links are there.
It's all there at aquilo.com. And you can find anything from me at tvstravis.com, including links to all the social medias that I'm on as TV's Travis and merchandise there. The Patreon is there for this show, patreon.com/WYHS. You can support the show there as well. If people want to find outside of Aquilo anything you're doing, where would they look?
I am everywhere on all the social medias as Daniora, D-A-N-I-O-R-A. That is places like, Twitter and Blue Sky and Threads. I do also have Daniora.com that has all my links. I gotta do some more work, but it's there and you can find things.
Excellent. Daniora.com, Daniora on all the social medias. I'm TV's Travis on all the social medias, TV'sTravis.com. And we do a show together with our friends Stephen and Audie called Those Were the Days, talking about classic TV. And we are in the middle of the worst episodes.
This week.
Yes. Worst episodes of great TV shows. We're diving into some X-Files this week. So by the time this comes out, we will have recorded that. And that's
It'll
fantastic.
It'll probably be live on the feed too.
Probably. Steven's quick about
Steven's
that.
Steven's quick.
So until now, next week, I have something fun planned. I will find out what that is because I don't remember anything. But I've got a couple of good episodes coming up. Ah, yes. Next week, Tyra Burton, who is a member of the Dragon Con digital media track, she is going to come on. She has never seen The Secret of Nim. And I had a very similar reaction to yours, which is how, what, no, wait, hold on, does not compute, you must watch. And so we are going to watch The Secret of Nim, and I cannot wait because I love that movie so much. Don Bluth animation is some seriously underrated stuff, and I am super, super looking forward to talking about The Secret of Nim next week with Tyra. So you definitely want to come back for that. Until then, though, for Amy, I am Travis saying to enjoy your movies and just remember, be excellent to each other. All right, this is Wait, You Haven't Seen.
Lolru.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.